Us first, be kind first, and destroy them later, I guess.
Today we make IP your business. It's a podcast that explores how intellectual property positions a company to succeed or stumble. I'm Allison Mages, head of the IP commercialization section at the World Intellectual Property Organization. We call this season Video Game Development, a quest for IP. Join our adventure through five levels of game development, where you'll hear from industry experts about how these rights will help your business level up or reach game over.
And hi, I'm Michaela Mantegna, a video game researcher at the Vernon Klein Center at Harvard, and I will be this season co-host. We are on level 2, IP in the development phase. Today, we explore the challenges of creating a new world within a video game. From creating an architectural experience to providing historical details and characters, how does IP affect these decisions? We will hear more about this on how to create a new world with Macula Interactive. Our guest today is Paola Vera. Paola is an audiovisual producer, graduate from Universidad de las Américas Puebla. For the past 7 years, she has worked on several audiovisual productions that range from commercials to short films with international selections. Recently, she started working as a director of Macula Interactive's production team to develop Mexico 1921. So it's a pleasure to have you. Welcome, Paola. And we want to start this interview by asking, how did you start in the video games industry? How did you start with video games? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for your time. And actually, it's a funny story because I'm an audiovisual producer. I studied that in school. That's what I've done for the past 7 years of my life. You know, I've worked on different productions that go from commercials to some short films that like actually went to a Cannes Film Festival. And it was a fun time. And then pandemic hit. And well, everything sort of went down the drain and we had to find new ways to be creative. It sounds wild, and it was, and it is, and it's probably still going to be. But that's how we got in here. We actually just gathered everything we knew about producing things out of visual products and put it into video games and grabbed a huge mirror and said, you are a great ignorant about this, so you might as well ask people who know. And we started making a lot of friends in the industry through a documentary. We did know how to make documentaries. So we reached out to Mexican industry, Mexican developers, Mexican academics that talk about games. And we made a small documentary series that's called Ludens, like Homo Ludens, you know, but just Ludens. And that's actually how we got into the industry, literally knocking on doors and said, hey, you seem like a really cool person. Could you just teach me about what you do? And that's how we got here.
You are saying like, this is how Macula started. And I wanted to ask you, because we are both Latin American, is Macula, Macula, and what does Macula mean?
Macula, it's got an apostrophe on the A. So in Spanish, yes, it's got the action over there. So it's Macula. Actually, we've got a lot of different opinions on the name, but it all began because we wanted to refer to the piece of the eye, or the part of the eye that lets you see things with detail, that allows people to see detail in things. So that was the actual reference that we used. But it's also come about a spot, because macula is also means a spot. So that's also why our logo is like a splot of paint, you know. And what does it mean? It means that we want to try and look at ourselves with a little bit more of a detail. We want to look into our history with a little bit more of a hard eye, you know. And yeah, that's what we wanted to do with Macula.
It's a really, really cool name.
That's super. I have to say, and also it's so inspiring to go from film to video game and think about how these are, you know, hugely creative industries, but still quite different. And it sounds like you've been on quite a journey. So I have to ask, maybe just to get us started, when did you first hear about intellectual property?
I actually first heard about it in school when I was like in university, because Yeah, cinema has a lot to do with intellectual property. And I've been fortunate enough to grow in a family with lawyers. So I've always been close with the law. And you know what has to be done and how people have to be smart about it. So when we started the company, the first thing we knew what we had to do was register the idea and our characters. And we also knew it was a complicated thing because it's not an original story from the point of view that it's a historical point. It's a historical story. But we did write original characters. And our story is actually a fiction written into Mexican history. So I called my cousin and, you know, got advice. And I try to get close to people that know most because I tend to not know a lot. And I actually like to know people and what they know about things. So that's how I heard about intellectual property and how to take care of it. It's been a long journey. We've known and we've met a lot of different teams that work on it. And right now we are comfortable enough with a team that's been real close and guiding us through this maze of lawyers and IP things, because it's a maze. That's what it is.
Absolutely. I wanted to touch upon something you were saying about Makula and the way that you want to create or recreate history. How do you see this about games helping to preserve and transmit culture, in particular in our region in Latin America?
It's a great question. It's a beautiful question with a beautiful answer, actually. That's a huge recommendation that I always tell everybody that tells me, how do I get into the game industry? Just get into game jams. Start making games as quick as you can. That's actually how we got the idea that history and art and cultural patrimony can be preserved through video games. There was a game jam that was organized by Mexican Digital Cultural Center and the Institute of, oh my God, this is difficult to me, for me, I'm sorry. The Institute.
Say it in Spanish, no worries.
El Instituto Nacional de Antropología e Historia. So it's the National Institute of History and Anthropology. And they made this game jam or organized this game jam for people to come and design games talking about the cathedral. And that's how we made one of our other games that's called Andamios y Restauradores, that's Builders and Scaffoldings. So it's a resource game where you have to help restore the facade of the cathedral. You know, you have to understand what are the risks that patrimony holds while being outside in the natural world. You know, there's wind, there's water, there's birds. And that's when we said, huh, so you can actually protect history and help divulge history through video games. And that's what like planted the seed in us to said, maybe we should be doing games about this, not about anything else. We should be doing games about this because we like art. We really do like it. And we like history and we like culture and we like games.
I wanted to touch upon something you say, how video games connected you to your friends during the pandemic, because there is a lot of people that says that video games is us, and particularly in our culture, like you are losing time playing video games. What do you say to a person that's like a skeptic about video games and how can video games can help society and connect people?
I guess we forget how to play, you know, and that play is a part of an innate part of life. And that we should not be thinking of game, of playing, as the counterpart of productiveness. Because games do not stop you from being productive. You are not like staring into a blank wall while you're playing a game. There are things going on in your brain infinitely, you know? And there are emotions going through your body. So it's impossible to be losing time while you're playing a game. And you're actually, a lot of people usually tell me, you lose a lot of time learning how to play a game. And I'm like, yeah, of course you have to learn how to play a game. It takes time. It takes time to learn the rules. But I promise you, if it's a cool game, you're going to have a reward, you know? And I guess we have to stop seeing games as a counterpart of our productiveness. We are not wasting time while we're playing. We are working on ourselves and our creativity and our mind and our working our mind through new things, you know, that you don't see every day and that you cannot see on your computer at work for 8 hours a day. So there to play, friends, there to play. That's what I would say.
That's amazing. And if I can put a personal note on this, because I think that games allow you to try different skins, different versions of yourself. And this is something personal on me because I'm a lawyer. And when I decided to go into video games, people were saying, particularly in Latin America, it's like, oh, you are throwing away your career. What are you doing video games? Because this is not, as you were saying, something not productive. And I kind of discovered this passion playing Mass Effect. Mass Effect is one of my favorite video games in the whole world. And one of the things that was there about artificial intelligence was the thing that sparked my research on AI ethics. So I really, really love that quote about you are not staring into a blank wall while you're playing. That's kind of super, super fascinating. And also something really important that you say you are relying on a network of peers that wants to help you and wants to make you succeed. And sometimes being, and this connects with what Alison was saying about innovation. Sometimes when you are the only one doing it, that shows you that you are on the correct path because you are doing something that nobody did before. And that in the long run is going to make you successful. And that's what innovation is all about, like creating new paths across things that we don't know.
Absolutely.
Grabbing the machete and going into the jungle, you know?
Absolutely. So, okay, so I'm going to switch gears just a little bit because yes. Michaela told me I could ask a couple questions.
Of course. Yes, of course. Go.
Just kidding. So your games use historical elements as part of really like a real core part of what you're building. So what kind of challenges are there when you're using real buildings and real art to building a game?
It's really complicated. It is not an easy job. It is not an easy structure that you have to build because that's what it is. Recapitulating a little bit, because of how Macula started, it all started like really romantic, you know? So we built these prototypes thinking that we were going to work with these people and that everybody's going to say yes and that everybody's going to jump into the project and everything's going to be great, you know? And then you go out there and it's like, okay, it's going to be a little bit harder than that, but it's not impossible. So what we did was we narrow it down, just like thinking about it like a game design. I think you have to go to the simplest thing, the most basic thing for your game that was like, okay, we're talking about Mexico. So what is the institution that we need to approach first? You know, like, how are we going to talk about this? So since we already had the background with INAH, that's the Instituto Nacional de Antropología e Historia, we started knocking doors over there and like, hey, we want to do this. Do you know who should we ask about? Who are we going to ask permission to? And they started pointing away. And actually, I was really lucky to get into a conference about intellectual property, an institution and some lawyers here in Mexico that were kind enough to share their experience. And it was really interesting because they've done this for a couple of movies, of historical movies. And I said, okay, that's what I need. I need that one. And I called them up and I said, hey, I have this project. Would you be kind enough to take a look at it and just show me the way? And they were really kind enough because they showed us the way. You know, they read the entirety of the script. They went through every character, every piece of art, every piece of document that we were mentioning in our script. And we work with the light stop, red, yellow, green, you know. We work with those. We have a code. So we have the greens that are like a go. Those are not a legal problem. Just go with it. So we started working there. This is a go. Just put it into game, put it into game, put it into game. What we have on a yellow, that's like a, that's a complicated thing because you could talk about a building through this way, or let's talk about, or get this permission, or you could not ask for a permission, but maybe pay this quote, or you could, you know, like these are your options, your legal options. And when we have those legal options, we just, my partners and I just sit, think about it. We guess what's the best option and just work through it. And that's got us really far. That's got us actually, there's a lot of bureaucracy that actually works. So just stick to it and be consistent and write the emails, fill out the forms and pay the things, you know, and that's, it's slow. It is really slow, but it works. And the things that we have like in the red tier, the ones that are like really dangerous, are mostly people and names, you know, because of morals and that kind of stuff. So what we did was we actually started approaching a more humane way. The lawyers were like, we could do this 100% legally, like through a requisito, you know, and ask the families through this and this and this law, I am asking for the usage of your family's name in my video game. Or you could like call them up and say, hey, I'm working on this. Do you mind taking a look? Because we're actually interested in inputting your family member here and there and blah, 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 blah. So that's how we're doing it. That's how we've approached some members of their families. And that's how we're working, because we intend this to be a little bit more humane. We don't want it to be like really institutionalized, because we like people. And the more we get to know about them, the more input we get to put into our game. We don't just want the name. We do want the story, you know?
I love that, because I think that sometimes when we talk about legal issues, it's really easy to get stuck on those, you know, checklists. I must write this very official looking thing, when picking up the phone is just as good, right? I mean, it sounds like a lot. My guess is you got a lot more out of those exchanges by calling them rather than sending some strange registered letter that they probably would throw away.
It's a different approach. Yeah.
And also I like what you said about, because you started, well, this is a mess, it's really complex, but you started like, let's do it and take a step, one step at a time. And you created a system like with three simple things, like the three lights. It's a really concrete advice that anyone can take. It's like, okay, I kind of break down my things into three categories and then work from there. And something that is really important, when did you do that? Because you say that you had the script and you haven't still produced anything before checking, right?
We did that parallel. We were still modifying some stuff in our script. And we were like, these are the things this character is going to say. These are the themes that are going to be touched. These are the places he's going to be at. These are the things he's going to be wearing. These are the things he's going to be touching or interacting with. And that's what we sent over. And it's a continuous work. You just can't do it one time. Like it's a thing that just evolves. And as much as the game is evolving, the legal part is evolving. It's like a living thing. You just have to keep pushing those two balls, the production ball and the legal ball and the accounting ball and the funding ball and, you know, all those different balls.
To me, it's so refreshing to see that you don't have to be overwhelmed by this and that you can really just go at it step by step, breaking in chunks. And the fact that you were doing it so early, like Michaela was saying, makes a tremendous difference, because before you're so far along a path, you can't go backwards. But why did you think to go that early? Because I think a lot of studios think about this later in the process.
Because it was really clear. Diego Rivera is Diego Rivera. It was really, really clear that I was going to have to do some legal research here. And we were talking about using Mexican flags. So I thought this is going to have a really strong legal side. So as I said, I'm family grown with lawyers. So I just called my cousin, you know, like, I think this is going to be important, you know, so help me out.
It's literally the in-house counsel. It's like the cousin, the in-house counsel.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, he pointed me out to some people that I should talk to. And that's how it'll begin.
Paola, I have a question about how those game jams work a little bit. You mentioned that you had your core team, then you had some other people jump in from other places, which I think is great to be able to pull on a bunch of different resources. In that kind of situation, how do you think about ownership of what the product is that comes out of it?
It was actually a conversation that I had to have with these other people that jumped into our team, because we've set out to the game jam to work us. We got our team. We do not need other people. Then we were like, wait a minute, why not? And they jumped in and I was like, okay, I just want you guys to know that we are building a studio. So we are here as Macula, not as Paola, Luis, Daniela, you know, we are here as a team. And whatever results from this, we want to put it on our website. Is this okay with you? Do you have any problem with this? And they were really cool about it. Of course, they are credited on what they did on the game, but they were okay. This was a conversation we had because obviously it's complicated, but I wanted to be straightforward and just like, hey guys, if you're not okay with this, would you mind just like looking for another team, because we're really looking forward to this? And no, they perfectly understood and we worked together, and I think the final result was lovely.
So it's a message is ask first, right? If you ask first, it's probably not so bad.
Ask first, be kind first, and destroy them later, I guess.
With the machete.
With the machete, bro.
So I like that you're pulling on this incredible community, which sounds like a friends, peers, and it's super collaborative. When you're building out this team, and you mentioned sometimes you're using external partners, I'm not sure if you meant in the figurative or literal sense that they weren't sitting in your studio. What kind of arrangements do you have with them as you try to work on this game? Do you have contracts, or is it more of a handshake?
We do have contracts. We have to have a legal base. The least you can do is have this written in a paper and everybody signs it. But everything we did was with a legal advisor. So we think, or I think, that we've done a pretty solid legal base that we're working on. So everybody knows what the responsibilities are, what the responsibilities with the studio are, and we go from there. If there's any doubt, just like, here, it says, you signed.
I ask this paper. But it's really cool because it takes a lot. Building a studio and working like 24/7 with your partners is like, can be exhausting, and frictions can arise. So having everything note down can also help that process of okay, this is what you were supposed to be doing, and this is what we are expecting you to be doing. And it can help that, because people think sometimes that legally is like, okay, we are not friends anymore because we have this on paper. And maybe that can actually help to keep that state of peace within the studio.
Yes. And I also think that the only way that you can actually make your studio evolve into an indie that's actually producing something for Xbox or PlayStation or like Steam, actually doing business, you have to be a registered business. So do not be afraid to like register your business out there. Get your RFSA, man. Get that number. Make your business legal. Because if not, I could have not been like an Xbox partner or a PlayStation partner, because if you do not register your business.
So one of the things I think you mentioned at the beginning, Paola, was that you did register some intellectual property. Can you tell us a little bit about what you chose to protect and why?
Yeah, it was a complicated thing because I actually asked, okay, so I want to register right now my script, my original characters and their concept art and blah, blah, blah. But what about if they change? What about if Juan loses an arm in the game and now he doesn't have an arm, or a kid just grows up in the game and looks completely different than the tiny character I just registered? And so they said, oh yeah, you have to register that too. And I was like, oh, thanks. So what I did was actually another thing, sort of like the lights, the red, yellow, green. We did the basics, the original characters, the script, the logo, the name. And then we worked for a couple of months more, or more than a couple of months. We worked for like 8 months, almost a year without touching that. And then I knocked over on the lawyer's door and said like, hey, we got like 4 levels now built. So what's going on? Should I be registering this? And I think you can, and I think you should, but it is also a thing that you should plan about because it costs money. I think you should also plan when to register new things when you are final on them, because video games are really iterative. You know, they just go over and over and change and not go back. And now the level is 3 rooms instead of 1, and you know? And the advice that I got was, reach your milestones and register milestones. Whenever you have final milestones that are like really important and you are like, oh yeah, this is done, go and register that if it's relevant. And that's what we've done. Making games in Mexico is for the brave, is for the passionate, and is for the really organized people too. And so I would say, yeah, don't be afraid. Just jump into it and do the job. do the work, because it's actually a work, a job.
It takes like a whole lot of passion, a lot of organization. And Paola, you know, we can see, and everyone that meets you can see, that you have all of those things and that you are going to be successful. And we wish you like nothing but the best for your project. And we want to thank you so much for sharing all this insight and wisdom with us today. And if you can close with like little quote of advice. You give us so much, but a little advice for those that are just starting this path, what that would be?
A piece of advice for somebody who's just starting in the video game industry, just do it. Do it. If you have an idea and if you're passionate about it, I think that the most important thing about an idea or anything is the passion you put into it. If you're not really passionate about your project, I don't think it's going to get very far. But if you can share a little bit about that passion with at least one person, you're winning. So dare to do it, and it's going to be hard. It really is. But you can do it. I think we all can.
We all know that you can. So
absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Paola. It has been wonderful to have you.
An absolute pleasure, really.
It has been wonderful to be here. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time and for the invitation. It's been really great.
So as Paolo said, developing a game and thinking about IP go hand in hand. Putting it together for us is Professor Gaetano De Mita in his Power Up introduction. Gaetano, to you.
During the development phase, your creative process will be fluid and your video game constantly evolving. This makes it the ideal time to make changes to maximize intellectual property protection of your original creation and to avoid infringing other people's IP. This is why it's always good to think about IP every time you reach the point in which you're sure or relatively sure that the content is not going to change in the final product. In order to facilitate this process, it will be important to raise awareness about IP amongst your team and to include IP clearance and protection strategies in your milestone. IP clearance means checking that you have the rights you might need to launch the video game safely. And start with those elements that will be expensive to change later on. For instance, the title of the game, the name of the main character, the plot, the storyline, the engine, or the software you're using. It'll be easier if you kept records. Remember, we discussed it last time. During your IP clearance, and in order to determine which assets are okay, which one are a no-go, in the sense they are really high risk of infringement, and which others might need further analysis and risk assessment, you can follow a traffic light system marking the assets as red, yellow, and green. Another good practice at this stage will be to conduct as soon as possible what is called a knockout search, to check if there are any similarities with any pre-existing right. You might not be aware that the title of your game is already a registered trademark by a competitor, or the name of your character. The sooner you find out, the better, because you will have to change them eventually. You will have to apply for a license in order to use them down the line. And a good advice is, for instance, to immediately type in your favorite search engine the term that you want to use and to find out whether or not someone else is using, or for instance, conduct a quick search on the free WIPO databases. The other side, when it comes to protecting your video game, in copyright, the process is straightforward and as there are no formalities, and thus the majority of your original creation are going to be protected by copyright. For trademark and design, you will have to continue to do what you started doing in the consent phase to ensure that titles, names, particular symbols are not similar to the one already registered by competitors. Because not only there is a risk of infringement, but also these similarities will make it more difficult for your creation to be fully protected. If you have to change something to avoid paying a license or to increase the scope of your protection, it's better to do it now. Also, if you're doing something different and very innovative, this is the time to talk with a patent attorney to determine whether there is scope for a patent application. Clearance and protection strategies, they go hand in hand. And if you want to apply for a registered IP, for instance, trademark or design, it's important to do it as soon as possible. But in this phase, they might be still evolving and might not be advisable to register something and spend the money if you're not sure you're going to use it at all at the end. Before concluding today's Power Up, I would like to refer to the issue of using in your video game real-world objects and person, including historical one. This conversation and the clearance process goes far beyond IP, as most countries have legislation on commercial use of their cultural heritage and historical figures. If this is your plan, I would strongly suggest you to contact legal counsel just to get an idea of what the clearance process might look like, who is in charge for that assets in the countries in which you are taking it from and in the countries in which you want to distribute your video games in.
And that's a wrap for Level 2. Stay tuned for the next episode of Video Game Development, A Quest for IP. We're going to hear from Tencent about the role of IP in launching video games at a global scale and how it can work for you too as an indie developer.
Thanks for listening to Make IP Your Business. This podcast is brought to you by WIPO, the UN agency for IP that enables innovation and creativity for everyone, everywhere. You can find all the episodes, download the power-ups, and join the community on our website. Check out the show notes for the links. See you on the next level.